This fall's most kick-ass new drama is about to kick off. Wednesday, October 10th, the highly anticipated new series All-American premieres on the CW. Suspense and superhero mastermind Greg Berlanti, producer of massive hits like Riverdale and Black Lightning, is now about to kill it in the sports genre as well. Inspired by local football hero Spencer Paysinger, All-American is about a high school football phenom from South Central who gets recruited to play in Beverly Hills. Tay Diggs crushes it as Beverly High football coach Billy Baker, a former star player in his own right who sees himself in Spencer. Coming off of two losing seasons, he also sees Spencer as his ticket to job security. Billy promises Spencer the chance to someday go pro and give his family a better life. The relationship between coach and player, who each have everything to lose, is the driving force behind some pretty intense drama, both good and bad. If you could draft a fantasy football team for fall TV, All-American would be in a league of its own. Catch the series premiere of All-American Wednesday, October 10th on the CW.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's the most hyper frenetic podcaster around. I am Rob Cesternino, and I am so excited to be back here. One, back here literally in this room, back in the studio after a long trip to New York. But I'm so excited to be back here podcasting with my co-host from the critically acclaimed Summer of Stein podcast. Please welcome America's favorite, Eric Stein. Eric, my man, what is good?
Rob, great to be back with my ride or die, never flip-flopping. I'm excited to talk some Survivor.
Yes, yes. And shout out to the greatest Goliath of them all, who gave us so many fond memories this summer. Eric, it's been a couple of weeks. How was Barbados?
Barbados was good, but I must say, Rob, after a summer of feeling great, now that the autumn of Stein is upon us, not so good anymore. I am a big, well-known hater of the fall. I do not like apple picking. I do not like pumpkin spice. I don't want to see any persimmons. Crisp air is just cold. A scenic drive is pointless. No good. I am not a happy camper today. The summer is over, and the fall, the literal fall of Eric, has begun.
Well, what do you like? Because you notoriously don't care for the summer because you end up too clammy. You don't like the fall. Is it the winter that you like?
No, I don't like the winter. That's for sure.
The spring? The spring?
You have me questioning my life now, Rob. Let's just get to Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that the fall is actually really popular because, it's not great, but compared to the winter, the winter is just like January to March is just the pits.
The thing I don't like about the fall is that people take it as some sort of bizarro state of mind. Mm-hmm. If you love pumpkin spice so much, why not just have it in April? Mm-hmm. Have it in July. I don't understand why the things everyone loves so much about the season come and go so quickly then. It just seems to me that it's just a fake state of mind, and I do not like it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we can get into this discussion some other time. Eric, I would also love to touch base with you about some of the ending of Big Brother 20, but maybe we'll do that at the end as sort of like a post-credits like Marvel movie at the end, because I know that there's a lot of people who are probably a little bit uncomfortable that the Survivor purists who don't want to hear anything about Big Brother that I'm even talking to you right now.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that the last time I was a voicemails guest, I took a lot of heat for discussing the strategy of Survivor. Forget the fact that I've actually seen every episode of the show ever and was on a fellow strategy show, but I got the memo, and I'm going to be all Survivor all the time today, and I'm going to make it up to those fans.
Okay. Well, then that's actually a really good point that you bring up, and we have actually a voicemail that is about that very subject, about how unfair that is. So let me bring you this question. This is from Matt in D.C.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Eric. It's Matt Price in D.C. My question is for Eric. Eric, I know in the past you've been vocal about the fact that it's kind of annoying that people assume just because you're on Big Brother that that's all you're qualified to talk about. when you've never missed an episode of this TV show that we all love. So I wanted to give you a chance to just, like, flaunt your knowledge a little bit in front of the audience and answer once and for all. What is your favorite episode of Full House? Is it when DJ comes back home with new boyfriend Steve, or maybe an old classic, like when Michelle gets a new bed, maybe when they meet the Beach Boys? Not that you can go wrong with any of them, am I right? So anyway, just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And also, if you ever get a chance to really check out Survivor, I recommend it. I think you'd like it. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Okay. So, all right, we're joking around. All right.
No, I've heard good things about this Survivor show. That's why I wanted to give it a try this season for the first time ever. Okay. And definitely the best Full House episode is when Gia and Stephanie enter the talent show and sing The Sign by Ace of Base. But it all goes awry because they're more concerned about their outfits than practicing for the show. And then Michelle and her friends just mop the floor with them.
Yeah, that'll happen. That'll happen. All right, Eric, we have a lot of questions to get into after two episodes of Survivor, David versus Goliath, but it's been a very busy week on the podcast. We did our live show in New York City, and I thought it went very well. If you haven't checked that one out, really happy with how that went, because I get a lot of feedback from people, Eric, that I know you're no stranger to the negative feedback, where sometimes the people on Twitter tell me, I don't like it when you do the live shows.
I think you just got to feed the positive and stay crushing it, Rob. That's really what it comes down to with these. And, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I have had the pleasure of being at Live Know It All several times. It is a great experience and a real community builder. I understand that perhaps the focus, it might be a little bit more scattered than some others. But when you get to hear from icons of the game, let alone new ones such as, you know, Dom and Wendell and Noble, I mean, how can anyone be complaining about that? It was a great show, and I think everyone should give it a chance.
Yeah, thank you very much, Eric. And we also had our exit interview with Jessica Pete, and we had Chaos Cass on the recap show. And people said Chaos Cass was very fun as well. So check that all out on the Rob is a Podcast feed. But Eric, let's turn our attention to this brand new season. Eric, we have not spoken at all about Survivor. What has been your take early on here of David versus Goliath?
So far, so good. I think we're shaping up for a really exciting battle this season. I feel like we're going to get a lot of gameplay ahead. I think we're going to be hashtag blindsiding all over the place. I could see a couple of factions warring here. And I think we have a bunch of viable, strong players in the mix. One of the things that stood out to me right away is that we have a notably older cast this time around, at least in terms of average age. And I think that always will help you out. Very few 23-year-olds in this cast, and we just lost our youngest cast member. And I think it's good. People rule out having a little life experience and giving up a little bit more to come and play a game like this makes you play even harder. And I think already we're seeing a lot of people dive really headfirst into the game, and it feels like these people are taking their spots.
Was that
in the
a
game
Pat
series.
Joke about him getting hurt, Eric?
Yeah,
no well, headfirst diving anymore on this season.
That's right. Poor guy. It really that was painful to watch, literally and figuratively.
Oof.
So,
Eric, do you feel at home with the underdog tribe?
I do. I mean, I think that anyone who's allergic to their own shadow automatically would be placed on the David tribe. I'd like to, you know, I think my schooling and my parental background might make me an iffy slotting for Jeff's criteria. But let's get real here. If I needed to go visit the medic to get a daily allotment of Tums, good chance I'm on the David tribe. Let alone the fact that I, you know, the Davids are my people historically. So
right now, Eric, you have had a history in working with professional wrestling. Do you have any run-ins with John Hennigan?
I was at WWE at the same time as John. I do know him a little bit. I was not there super long, so I don't know him extremely well or anything like that. But I don't know if the Survivor fan base realizes that he originally came from a reality show himself. He actually won the third season of WWE's Tough Enough to get a contract to first start training and become a pro wrestler. So he has a little bit of history doing some confessionals in the past. He was the winner of that show. He's also about a 10-time WWE champion of sorts, not necessarily their main belts, but this is not a nobody in the world you know, world of wrestling. This is a guy who has some notoriety. So I think it's fun. Also, pro wrestlers, they have a storytelling ability. Pro wrestling is one big soap opera, so he gets it. You know, I think he's going to actually be a lot of fun this season.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what was going on in this episode in particular. And we had this blind side of Jessica over Lyrsa. Did you feel like that this was the correct strategic decision to get rid of Jessica over Lyrsa?
Yeah, 100%. This is a tale as old as time, since Matt the Rooster Quinlan couldn't count a simple majority. And, you know, the Cool Kids Alliance of the Karamoan. I do not understand why it is so difficult for certain people on certain tribes to not be able to add up a total of a majority. And of course, they should have flipped the script on her. They were... she was foreshadowing her own demise, and she needed to be humbled. I kind of feel bad for Jessica. I feel like this is someone who would, in looking back, she's going to wish that she actually played a handful of years from now. But she was overconfident. She felt, you know, really popular and well-positioned. She was dismissive of people on her tribe, and she paid the price for it. So I think for sure the five that voted her out, it was the right move for them and leaves them really well positioned on their tribe moving forward.
Let me bring in a voicemail here. This is from Megan from Chicago, and she has a different way of looking at this vote.
Hi, Rob. This is Megan calling from Chicago. And I had a question about choosing Lyrsa over Jessica. I think that Lyrsa is more of an oddball, maybe a more typical David. Is there any logic in keeping a typical David over someone who might fit in better with the Goliaths once the merge happens? Thanks. Bye.
Eric, what do you think about that? Do you think that Lyrsa as a David would be like a pure David? She would be a better person to keep around because there's less of a chance of her going to go work with Goliaths?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think that's actually a really genius point. I don't think that your Dans and Alex are going to be clamoring to work with Lyrsa moving forward. I also think she's going to be very loyal to the people who protected her, whereas I think you could easily argue that Jess would slot right in to the other alliance that's shaping up on the Goliath tribe. So I think, yeah, it's a really good point. I'm not necessarily certain that there was that type of foresight being used in this situation.
Yeah.
But I think it is a nice unintended benefit of the situation.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody was really looking at the chessboard and the metagame and thinking of that you know, Jessica was going to fit in better as a, you know, a pure Goliath.
Yeah, I don't think she really probably fit super well on the David tribe. And I saw that in some of her post interviews, this was sort of like a drum she was banging that, you know, like, well, if I was on the proper tribe, then I wouldn't have been voted out. And I know that there have been players on like Reigns, Braun, Beauty that have felt similarly. And she probably has a bit of a point, but I must say it reads a little bit as sour grapes. If I were her, I'd just say, listen, I got, and that's the end of it.
An interesting question, because I'm not really sure of the grounds of what exactly is she a Goliath of?
Yeah, I don't see how she's really a David or a Goliath. I guess in the sense of the game, she could have been considered an underdog because of her age, but she was, of course, lying about her age. Also, and I mean, I think this goes without saying, I think we all knew this while watching last season, but you got to give huge props to Jurger for the way he played last year. I mean, the guy showed just maturity so far beyond his years.
Up the JJ.
Yeah, and she played like a 19-year-old, so I think that's basically what happened here. I know that she was, some people felt really good about her after week one of the game, but that came crashing down quickly.
Yeah, she wasn't, you know, objectionably bad, but she wasn't super memorable either. She was just, you know, very just, you know, replacement level of, you know, young woman on Survivor.
A little early in the game to be fully discounting like half of your tribe. I think that was my biggest issue, is that she just thought she had it locked up so easily and just did the classic move of forgetting that there are other people playing as well, which is never a good idea. You know, she's, as Steven always says, right, hero of her own narrative. So she forgot the story that the other five of her tribe members were telling as well.
All right, Eric, let's talk a little bit about one of my favorite personalities here in this season. And I want to talk about Natalie. Your buddy, Brent the Showerman, is here with a question about Natalie.
What is good, my dudes? It's Brent the Showerman. I'm trying to be a Goliath of voicemails here, but I'll probably end up being a David. Anyways, do you guys have any insights in how to deal with somebody like Napalm Natalie? Clearly, it is not to explain self-awareness to her, and it is also not to try and have fun with her, because she does not like either of those things. Eric, as a Goliath of watching reality TV, and Rob, as a Goliath of talking about reality TV, do you guys have any tips on how to approach her, how to get her on your side, or is it just to vote her out as soon as you can? All right, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Eric, how has the Napalm Natalie experience been for you so far?
So good. So good. Wherever they found her, time to give that casting associate a raise. Excellent job. Love her. And honestly, I don't think she's even playing that badly. I loved when she was like, you guys are playing like a bunch of Davids. Oh, yeah. That is a way to actually get a reaction and try and spark big moves and stir something up on her tribe. I loved I'm damn near 60. Come on now, guys. It's so funny. And I think there's basically three tacks that you could take with Natalie. One is you can listen to her and let her think she's calling the shots. Mm-hmm. Two is you can completely disregard her and drag her along as dead weight against her will. Like sort of like when someone is threatening to quit and you just don't let them leave the game and kind of bring them along. You can just basically ignore everything she says, but continue to protect her. Or three, you can vote her out. Those are your three basic options here. And I think I am in the camp that you guys were in some of your earlier discussions on this matter. I do not think Natalie is going to be an early boot this season. I think she is going to be around for a long time. And I think she should be around for a long time, because the fact of the matter is she's probably never going to have the social capital to do anything of worth in the game. So why not keep her around and kick her ass later on? I think the risk you're taking, and I was actually surprised to not hear Cass double down on this even more in her feedback, but I think that the risk is if you alienate her, she could potentially just do one of these blow up the camp type of moves that doesn't really benefit her per se, but you could be one of the people that gets sprayed with the shrapnel. So that's the one risk of keeping her around, is I don't think she's going to be sit by complacently and just be one of these people who just takes it. You know, she is going to do something if she's there, but I don't think she's going home anytime soon. Or the point she was making, honestly, they were spot on. What reason would they have to get rid of someone who's a social outcast and not good in the challenges?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's going to be interesting to see with her in terms of, you know, how this plays out, because she's not going to be somebody who is going to be just a number where, okay, tell me what to do for this vote. I know I'm at the bottom, but just tell me what to do. I could see people coming to her, and we saw John in this episode come to her and try to recruit her, and Jeremy spoke to her and tried to help her out, but she doesn't seem to be like, okay, well, I'm with you now, just tell me what to do. She seems like the kind of person that you might come to her and say, okay, here's the plan. You know, we're voting against Eric tonight. And, you know, so come with us. She could say, that's a dumb plan. I'm not going with that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think it's almost better. It's kind of what I was saying, that she might be someone to just leave out of the plans entirely and just deal with her ire. You know, she's just pissed off at all of you. But if you're all in it together, that's fine. What's the overall likelihood that she's going to get an idol or rally a whole crew together? But maybe, just maybe, comes the point in the game where someone actually does see how they could use her. But I agree. I think she's going to be resistant to anything. It seemed as if she had a very inaccurate read on the dynamics of the group. It seemed like she genuinely believed that people were listening to her, which is a whole other level of delusion and a great one at that.
You know, it seems like she would be a great person where she's like a great fake boot for every single blind side that you want to pull off. Where if this was Big Brother, she'd be like the person that would be nominated every single week, but then end up staying as person after person gets blindsided. We don't really see that a lot on Survivor, where somebody is just the default fake target for a long stretch of time.
Yeah, and it particularly works well because if she's not in anyone's stated alliance, then you're not even offending the low person on your totem pole. So it kind of protects that as well. It's just like, oh, yeah, of course, we're going to get rid of Natalie this week. I mean, you'd think eventually people would catch on, but I think we will probably see that a handful of times if they're really doing a savvy job. Plus, it does look like one of the subplots that we are going to get, if not the driving narrative of the season, could be these really strong female players. And, you know, hey, maybe Natalie rises to that. Maybe they see that in her, and maybe she ends up finding a place a little bit later on.
I want to play the clip that you mentioned about Natalie talking about how that this group is not playing like a Goliath tribe.
They're playing like a bunch of amateurs and a bunch of Davids. I don't know if y'all all should be on the Goliath tribe.
I love the idea that she's calling out the tribe, that they are not living up to the Goliath billing.
Yes, because after all, she has been playing like a Goliath through and through, right? Also, I like how what I thought was particularly funny, because Jeff wouldn't say this over his dead body, is the obvious use of the Davids as a blatant insult coming from Natalie.
Yeah, you guys are all a bunch of Davids.
Not like that doesn't mean you're playing like, right, scrappy underdogs. You're not playing like savvy, smart players. Nope, you are playing like pathetic sad sacks, unlike our tribe.
You don't even belong on the Goliath tribe. I'm the only Goliath on this group.
Yeah, that's right. She's maybe that will be the story of the season. The Goliath of all Goliaths, Natalie.
Yeah. Eric, I also liked it when we got the napalm Natalie coming.
But don't think I ain't gonna drop a little Natalie napalm before it's over.
What do you think the Natalie napalm looks like?
Well, you figure it has been building up for all of 5 or 6 days at this point. So, you know, she's got a lot stored up. I think, let's see. We can go through the classics. She doesn't seem like she's going to be a rice dumper to me. She doesn't seem like she's going to be an aqua dumper to me.
No,
I don't think she's going to knock down the tarp or anything along those lines. So I don't know. What do you think it's going to look like? I could see her maybe like sitting down and eating all of the coconuts or something along those lines, you know, or attempting to out secrets that aren't secrets to anybody else. I don't know. How are you envisioning this?
Now, we haven't seen Natalie lose her cool yet. I mean, she seems frustrated. She seems annoyed, but she's never raised her voice. Do you think that Natalie could turn into a yeller?
I think yes, very much so. I think I believe she described it herself as she's the boss and they're her employees, correct? So maybe she'll default to another early reality TV trope and try and fire some of her tribe members, possibly.
What would that look like? You're fired from the Goliath tribe.
You're fired. What if she goes to Jeff and she tries to reassign members of her tribe to the David tribe? What if she petitions to say, listen, Jeff, if you want the integrity of the season, we're going to have to send some of these people to where they belong. You know, get that Goliath Nick Wilson over on my side and send some of them over to the Davids.
Yeah,
that could be something.
I think Jeff might be into that. I think he might like that. You know, at the mat, he might say, look, if you guys are on board with this, sure, let's do it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sort of like defecting, right? Exactly. It's worked well for some people to return a lot in the past, you know? So
what do you think about this question from Justin from Reno?
Hey, Rob and Eric. Justin from Reno here. It seems like Natalie is getting too old for this shit, and John Hannigan really wants to work with her. Can't he just play the role of Riggs to her Murtaugh, and they can start the Lethal Weapon Alliance? And if they do, how far do you think they can go?
Do you see John Hennigan and Natalie as the new Riggs and Murtaugh?
I think it's in the realm of possibility. I actually really liked what John did there.
I heard that Mel Gibson really does not care for the David tribe.
No, definitely not. I loved what John did there. I thought it was a great move, and she just like was not having it, which was not a great on her behalf. Normally, figuring out who's isolated on your tribe and making them feel like they have a home with you, that could get you a game of full of loyalty from them, but not so much. It's I'm wondering if maybe you know, what's working against Natalie, as we heard on the episode, is that she's been married. So maybe it took her showmancing strategy out of her arsenal. Mm-hmm. And that's why she just doesn't know what to do with herself. She wanted to come out there and, you know, really flirt her way to the end. And now she's struggling because she knows that's inappropriate.
Maybe that's the case. She does not really seem to enjoy the antics. We had like a montage of a bunch of like the lighter moments going on at the Goliath tribe. And there was some talk about boogers, and she came away saying,
"Boogers in my teeth, that's a first."
Did somebody talk about boogers in their teeth?
That actually made me laugh out loud. That was an iconic quote right there.
Boogers in my teeth. I've never heard of that.
I have never. 57 years, I've seen boogers on an arm, a sleeve, up my nose, never in the teeth. That's a new one.
I've had it with these kids around here.
How dare they? What's next?
I'm over it. I don't even know if anybody, did anybody say boogers in my teeth? I heard of boogers, and then I heard, do I have anything in my teeth?
Yeah, no, definitely nobody said that.
Because that's not a thing, right?
No, it's not a thing. And let's just say, for argument's sake, someone was living in the jungle, and for whatever reason, they did have a booger in their teeth. Why would that personally offend her so much? You know, she's really a real dental hygienist out there.
Yeah. Eric, I'd love to talk a little bit about Christian and Gabby, who we saw get to work together this week. First off, what's your reaction to Christian?
I think he's all right. I've been enjoying it so far.
You're not super high.
I'm not super high. I think that even though we see all of the same archetypes over and over and over again on the show, the nerd archetype is the one that reads the most similarly from generation to generation. And sometimes it's hard to feel like it's not like a eighth generation copy of an old VHS tape. I know this is a very timely reference, yeah. But like back in our day, if you wanted to copy from VHS to VHS, with each copy, the quality would diminish ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like we have seen this act five too many times before. And that's not to say there's anything against him, his gameplay, what he's bringing. I think he's actually been far less grating than some of those other characters in the past. I like the fact that he's actually a little bit on the older side. We're not getting the 21-year-old nerd here. And I think, you know, he has some chops in the game. But if anyone who has ever seen Survivor or Big Brother before lets this guy advance deep into the game, they're doing so at their own peril. And I don't know. I do not have super high hopes for him taking this to the end of the game. How about you?
So I am higher on him. I'd actually like to talk about the fan reaction to him a little bit, which has been, for the most part, pretty positive, where a lot of times, you know, it seems like the people are a little bit over this archetype, sounding a little bit more like you're coming into it. First off, I agree with you in terms of the players in the game. They should immediately target this person and get rid of them. And I'm surprised that he seems to be in good graces with everybody, because you would imagine, especially after his performance in that first challenge, that he would be a huge threat and somebody that everybody would want to go for. But Max Dawson had actually tweeted about this, and just to sum up what he said, that he was surprised about how positive the fan community had been towards Christian, whereas Ryan and some others from recent seasons had gotten a little bit more panned by the fan community. And I wanted to ask you about why you thought that might have been. Max had thought that maybe it had to do with Ryan's politics, but I don't really think it's that, because I don't think that people are that, you know, some people are, but for the most part, I don't think that the huge cross section of the audience are that tapped into what anybody's politics are when they're not, you know, tweeting that every 5 seconds. Do you have a thought on this, Eric?
Yeah, I do, actually. I think it's that Christian is unabashedly and authentically himself, and he's not trying to be anything else. You could see how, as fantastic as he was, you could see Zeke playing hard for those TV moments and, you know, big moves. And he came to sort of represent that movement. And Ryan, I think, occasionally tried kind of hard to be, you know, a little on the cooler side of things and make those types of jokes and bonds and this and that. Whereas Christian is just coming out there and saying, hey, guys, this is me. I'm wearing the shirt. I'm not even trying to hide it. I couldn't try it if I hide, you know, try to hide it if I wanted to. And I also think that he's actually benefiting early on from the relationship with Gabby, which I think people are finding to be endearing. And I don't get me wrong. I think that he's been rootable and likable so far. It's just for me, I feel like it's hard and it's nothing he's doing to feel like this doesn't have a little bit of a been there, done that feel with him, but through no fault of his own. You know, we're 37 seasons into the show. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think he has been likable. I think he's just been owning who he is to this point. So I think, you know, that's a good look for him. I don't know if it'll sustain itself. I think, listen, most of us as fans, if you're watching every single episode of a 20-year running show, we probably self-identify a little bit sometimes with these types of characters. I know that I do. So I think that sometimes the frustration comes in because we're using these types of players as our avatars in the game. And these are the people that we want to see playing the way that you've imagined all of these years playing yourself. So far, Christian's been doing a good job. So I think people are in this corner. It's like, hey, look, one of us, he's doing it. So I think, you know, so far, so good from that front.
I have a little bit of a different theory on why it's worked for Christian so far. And he was somebody that I really was worried about coming into this season where, you know, when I first read some of his quotes on the season and he's talking about how, you know, oh, Steven broke down, you know, the trust clusters and, you know, all of the voting blocks and all that stuff. I'm like, oh, great. People are going to really eat this up. People just love hearing this type of stuff. And I thought that Reddit's going to destroy this guy. But then he comes out in this first episode, Eric, and he ends up solving that slide puzzle in 7 seconds. And I think that by that being his introduction to the audience, that he's not coming in and telling you, I'm a genius, I'm so smart, I know everything. But he came out and he demonstrated his exceptionalism, his superpower, right off the bat. And I think that some other people, whereas Cochran didn't really play well until his second season, and Ryan talks about how his fandom, where Christian is coming into the game and yes, he's a nerd, but he's able to demonstrate why he is cast on the show immediately right off the bat. And I think that maybe that's what has given him a little bit of a leg up.
Well, yes. Yeah, so the show don't tell. He's not coming out there and just claiming it. He's actually
I know
out
everything.
There doing it. However, if he was really such a student of the game, he wouldn't have done that. So it's a double-edged sword there, where that might be what people are responding to. Man, this guy just went out there and owned that. But we see what happens to physical threats who come out there and dominate, you know, in the early going and so forth. So, I mean, is there a possibility he positions himself almost in the way of a Chris Noble, where he's being used by his tribe as a puzzle solver in the challenges, just like someone could be used to physically help your tribe? And could this be a new type of version of the first merge boot type of player, where he's actually now just going to be used instead of for his physical prowess, but for his mental prowess, just for a couple of rounds? I mean, I think that's a possibility.
Yeah. And just to go back to what I'm saying with this, where he's presented as, you know, this person, this robot builder, as somebody who has like a super smart job, as opposed to Ryan, who was presented, you know, he's a fan and he's a bellhop, or, you know, I'm not even sure what Zeke's job was, or, you know, Cochran is like a law student, but also, you know, is presented as the fan. Whereas I think that Christian is a little bit in a different light in that he has like a super smart job that's sort of like in a cutting edge industry.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a, I think that that is a great point. Right. He feels like the real deal. Someone who's actually taking time out of their life to go on this adventure. Whereas, you know, no offense to bellhopping, the show will go on at the hotel if you're not there for, you know, 5 weeks.
Right. So, like, I do think that he's coming to the show as, okay, this person is a genius who's here on this tribe, as opposed to somebody who is a fan of the show and is not, you know, just trying to, you know, give us jokes because they're a fan of the show. You know, I think it's a subtle difference, but I think it's what has made Christian pop more in terms of being accepted by the audience.
But as I'm saying, no different than Big Muscles, you know, wearing that mark of a genius, that's just walking in with a huge target. It's what I always objected to about Brains Bronze Beauty is that, you know, some people on the Brains tribe, they could have pass themselves off as something else. It's sort of like tipping their hand. And I think what you're saying is what's endearing about him is also could be a real problem for him in the game, is that he is coming out there the real deal and he is owning what he's bringing to this game. The problem is that is extremely threatening to someone who is not a genius. And let me tell you something, there are plenty of non-geniuses on this cast.
Yeah. And with all due respect to Ryan and Zeke and Cochran and all these people that I think are very fun, you know, they get a raw deal from some of the people on the internet.
Oh, absolutely. I think...
As do we.
Yeah, I think that these characters, and I think in the all of the instances you named, I think they all played great games and really brought a lot to their respective seasons. And I think Christian will do the same here. I mean, it's you cannot rule out the leg up that it actually gives you to be familiar with the game you're playing. And sometimes it's fun to watch people learn on the fly, but it really does give you a big advantage to understand the dynamics of what is happening on a vote to vote basis. So I think we'll be seeing a lot more of Christian for a while, at least.
Okay. Eric, speaking of Christian, here is a voicemail from Renee.
Hey, Robin, Eric, this is Renee. I realize you guys might not be the best persons to ask, but is it just me or is Christian sexy AF? Let me know your thoughts.
Why are we not the best to ask? Of course he's sexy AF.
What about this, Eric? Okay, a bit of a blindside here that Christian, sexy AF.
Hey, my television has taught me on The Big Bang Theory that these gentlemen can do real nicely for themselves, you know? So I like this new sex symbol. Mm-hmm. I agree. He's going to be right to the calendar.
So what is it about Christian?
For one, they didn't put him in a sweater vest.
So you think that's it? But I do think that this, and this is going back to Christian versus, you know, Cochran or Ryan, that Christian does seem to have a confidence about him that maybe those other characters didn't have, where he seems so sure about his ability and he's not, you know, like if anything, he did the thing in 7 seconds and then had a bunch of second guesses about how he could have done it better, as opposed to, you know, questioning, you know, why am I even here or things like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. He owned it. Although I think the real question is, why is this man on the David tribe? He's clearly a Goliath of his industry. He is confident. He is sexy AF. So this is sounding to me like a true Goliath, someone who is just out there and without any question, just owning his awesomeness.
So that's a good question. I believe what Jeff Probst said in the preseason was he was bullied.
Yeah, well, that's it seems like it's worked out all right for him in the end, right?
So, yeah, look, people were mean to him along the way.
Yeah, well, you know, they're probably still, you know, we've heard that one before of the, you know, the high school jock who bullies the Christian character. And, you know, I think Christian has turned out all right in the scheme of things. Somehow he's lived to fight another day. Yeah. So,
and I could be wrong about this. I believe that Christian has a girlfriend. I think that that's also that he's spoken for.
Yeah. This guy's loving life right now. But I'm going to throw out a theory, and people are not going to like my theory. So I'm just warning you right now. Mm-hmm. I believe that Christian is going to come out of this season extremely popular. And I believe that's because Gabby is going to stab him in the back badly.
Oh, no. Why do you say that?
because I think what people believe to be insecure or infantile in their little conversation in the sand, I believe that she was actually nerdipulating him.
Nerdipulating. Okay. All right. This is great, Eric. Okay. So let's play this question here about what's going on with Gabby.
Hey, Rob and Eric. I'm really confused about who Gabby is. The first week she was the nerd whisperer. I mean, think about it. She's a technical writer. Her job is literally to translate nerd to English. And then second episode, here she is, totally misreading what's going on with this conversation about Lyrsa, and she thinks it's about, that means that it's her. So who is she really? And a bonus question, when Gabby and Christian hook up, who makes the first move? Thanks.
He has a girlfriend, okay? I think.
Yeah, he's not that kind of player.
Yeah. Not like America's player.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes. But okay, so I think you might be onto something, because I was thinking about the same sort of thing when you're talking about that conversation between Gabby and Christian. I'd love to just play that real quick.
Christian, am I stupid?
Look, you have to trust your instincts in this game. I know that.
Do you want to play with me?
Play with you? On the
same? Do you want to play this game with me?
When have I ever indicated otherwise?
I know. I want to play with you, too.
Of course.
So that's why I'm asking. Are you comfortable protecting me?
Of course I'm good.
More than Jess. Do you bond with Jess?
No, I don't bond with Jess at all.
Do you have a neck for sure?
Eric, to me, what that conversation sounded like, you know, the woman that meets a guy and is like, oh, I really like you, but, you know, I have this this boyfriend, and would you do anything for me? Would you? You'd kill my boyfriend, right?
Yeah. Listening to that again actually makes me feel even more confident in my stance. She's going to eat this kid alive. Yeah, I think that this was done with intention. Will you be my hero here? Are you my protector? I need you. I'm so helpless. She's not so helpless. We know this factually. Also, I was scanning through the bios before, and when given three words to describe herself and her gameplay, flirtatious was one of them. Right. Just because you're not flirting with a hot fat cop doesn't mean that you can't flirt with other people. So she is going to wrap him around her finger. And I don't know that this is someone who cares to, protect him. I think she wants the protection in reverse. I feel like maybe she, I know that people are going to debate this and say that she was really lacking confidence, but I feel like that may have been strategic.
An act.
Possibly. Right. An act. I think maybe this is what happens when you get the Hannah type of character. But I could see something later on this season where, Gabby puts her foot down on a few people's throats. I mean, I do not know Gabby, so I could be dead wrong about this. I could have a totally inaccurate read about the situation. But there is something about that that felt to me like a setup I've seen in my life before, and it normally ended with me in tears at the end of the situation.
Yeah. You know, I also felt like going back and watching the episode again this morning that, Christian says at one point, and I didn't pull the clip, like, Lyrsa is clearly the person who is hurting us in the challenges, like in terms of like who is the weaker person, that Christian says that there's almost, there's no denying that we would be stronger to, remove Lyrsa. But Gabby really wants this. So I'm going to make this happen.
Well, and a few things also. I mean, is Jess going to really win them a tribal challenge over Lyrsa? Like, is that level of difference such a big difference that suddenly they're going to dominate the Goliaths if they weren't going to otherwise? Seems unlikely to me. Also, having the numbers on your side is a lot more powerful than having a slightly better physical competitor on your side. I mean, they're not voting out John Hennigan here. They're voting out Jess. So, okay, let's not get crazy. This is definitely the right move for the five people that made it. Also, and we'd have to go back years and years and years, but I am hard pressed to think of a zanier oddball alliance of unique walks of life than, you know, Elizabeth, Gabby, and Christian, and Lyrsa, and Nick together.
Are they the Faute of Survivor Alliances?
There's something, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, that is a very eccentric group.
I feel like if Elizabeth and Lyrsa can go deep into the game together, they could be the iconic Slay Queen, G.Oddis pair that, you know, we've been deserving our whole lives, possibly.
Name a more iconic pair. I'll wait. Eric, let me ask you another question about we saw Gabby writing in the sand. And could that have been an ominous moment for her in this season? Here's Matt.
Hey, Rob, it's Matt. It's my first voicemail. I had to wonder about Gabby. We've heard a lot of opposing opinions about her. Some people think she'll go far. Some people don't. But did we seal the deal when we saw her writing in the sand? We saw what happened with Michaela. And then again with Stephanie Johnson, where they both went home pre-merge after writing in the sand. Tell me what you think.
Eric, is that a ominous curse? That if you write in the sand, will it not work out for you?
Yeah, I mean, sand writing, that is a well-storied history of being a problem, especially for these strong female players. I think our friend here is on to something for sure. I mean, I don't want to burst anyone's bubble. I think it's probably a little bit more common. They just maybe don't show all instances of sand writing, but I could be wrong. Maybe you write in the sand and you are doomed.
Just to go back to Christian another time in this feedback show. I'm sure we'll go back to him a bunch of times. This is a moment from the episode that I really liked. The episode title.
The chicken has flown the coop.
I just love the way he talks also. The chicken has flown the coop.
Yeah, what does that even mean in this context? Like, I don't think he was really using the expression.
Yeah, I think he could have said that the cat is out of the bag. You know, basically the toothpaste is out of the tube here. It's just a matter of that things have gone out of control.
Yeah, or I thought perhaps he meant like the peasants are revolting or something along those lines. You know,
the peasants have begun to revolt. Yeah. It's all happening. It's gotten so crazy.
He is a charismatic narrator, for sure.
A hyper-frenetic person like myself could handle the speed of which things are moving. I like
it. Is there any possibility that Jeff, like he did for Cochran, actually arranges a guest spot on Big Bang for Christian after this season has aired?
No, I do not think so, because that I don't think that the Big Bang Theory in its final season needs the heat that Survivor is bringing. And like perhaps if there was some new show like The Neighborhood could benefit from perhaps a visit from Christian Hubicki.
TKO, possibly.
TKO, most certainly. Because that he would be able to like know the launch angle of the different things, where Kevin Hart would be very welcoming to have Christian.
Boop shot.
Let's go ahead and take some other questions. Okay, Eric, this is where we might start to lose some people. Okay,
too late.
Too late. Let's play this voicemail. This is from Kieran.
Hey, Robin, Eric, it's Kieran from Maryland. I want to talk about the Survivor players naming their alliances. So in this episode, Nick and Christian aligned, and Nick named their alliance the Mason Dixon. He even named alliances in the previous episode. So looks like he's been watching Big Brother. I wonder if future Survivor players will be now naming their alliances. So Eric, my question to you is, should future Survivor players name their alliances just like how the Big Brother players named their alliances?
Eric, have you been thinking that this has gotten a little Big Brother-y with the naming of the alliances?
Well, we heard Andrea talking about this the other night, and I agree with her. The naming of the alliances, it gives you some sort of camaraderie where you feel like you're in this together. And I know that this is going to sound completely preposterous, but if I'm in a named alliance with someone, maybe, just maybe, you feel a little less apt to betray them. If you're just a hodgepodge of first names, well, you can just replace the name. But no, if you are the Mason Dixon line, well, then That's impenetrable. You cannot go around turning on half of that. Then you'd just be Mason or Dixon, you know? So I think in this particular case, I think it might actually be a strategy. And I know that it's considered a little hokey at times, but I think there might be some underrated strategic value to the naming. And if nothing else, you're bored out there. So it's fun to go around and name your alliances. You feel like someone who would have named an alliance, right? You must have named your alliances.
Okay, so I think only was a part of one named alliance, and I named it, but I did the opposite version of it, where I named the alliance, and then I also betrayed the alliance because the alliance that I had made with Alex Bell and Jenna and Heidi. I had given the nickname the A4, and that was sort of based on, this is a long, long way to go, that I had a group of friends. I did have friends at one point in my life in college, and we had all stayed in Oswego for a couple of weeks after the semester, and we referred to ourselves as the O4, which was sort of a play on Eminem's band, the D12, and we were the O4, and I gave that group the A4, but then I was also the person that within like days of making the A4, then I was the one that also betrayed the A4.
Yeah, realistically, though, you know that you probably had a confessional back then and you were like, well, so much for the A4. I guess me, Jenna, and Heidi are now menage a trois.
No. Did not say that, Eric. But I do think that, you know, we've talked, you know, the idea of naming alliances is something that's been talked about for years. But what's interesting with Nick is this idea of naming a lot of two-person alliances. That do you feel like, is that an effective strategy?
No, that actually seems a little less effective to me, because I think you can wrap your head around that without the alliance name. I think that something that actually is a good strategy when naming would be to allow someone else to name it. And let it be their inspiration, so it feels like the namer is the leader of the alliance. So I think that might be where he's going wrong.
Okay, interesting.
Because now he is the one. So if anyone ever compares notes or people are going to turn on this alliance, he has put himself at the front and center of all of these alliances, which I think ultimately bites you in the butt a little bit. And I think, you know, over-promising is never a good thing in this situation. So I think he should have maybe sat back and allowed the names to come to him. But
yeah, I love his
zest for the game, which is nice. And I think, you know, we saw that from him, and we're seeing it from Christian and Davey. And it's fun seeing players out there who are just excited to be there. Whether or not that helps their game or not, probably not. But I like seeing Nick running around like this is his dream come true, which it is. So, you know, I'm glad he's having fun with it.
Okay, Eric, I love this idea. I want to role play. Okay, me and you are on a show, and I'll be the Nick Wilson character, and I want to see, play this out. Okay, so man, this is so great. We have an alliance. What should we call it?
Oh, wow. We're going to go with a name, Nick? Oh, wow, that's interesting. Oh, what did you have in mind, my friend?
I don't know. I'm so bad at this. What do you think?
Ooh, let's see. Well, you're wearing a blazer. No, that's not it. I don't know. What do you have in mind? You're probably better at this than I am.
I could go for anything. I just, whatever you want to go with. I mean, I'm up for, but I'm just drawing a total blank right now.
I'm voting you out next, Ben.
Wait.
It's too much resistance.
Yeah, well, yeah, this turned into me and my wife, but what do you want to have for dinner?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I've had that conversation before.
but on the surface, I feel like that this is good, because then it also seems like you're so agreeable and amenable to whatever the other person wants to do.
Well, I promise not to talk too much, Big Brother, but it's just a very easy example here. On my season, at one point, I was aligned with a gentleman named Evil Dick. Mm-hmm. That was his nickname in the house.
A napalm Natalie of his time.
That is correct. And he came up with the suggestion to call ourselves the Evil Empire. Great. Of course. That's perfect. I thought that worked so well, because it told you everything that you needed to know about what he thought of the alliance and his place within the alliance. So I said, yep, that's the perfect one. It works so beautifully with your nickname. We're the Evil Empire from now on. You got it, man.
Mm-hmm. I also think it might be interesting, Eric. What if that you went in and made all these two people alliances, but gave them all the same name? Because would that make the danger of detection greater or less extreme?
I think that this is genius. I would love this, but I don't think it should just be the two-person alliances. I think this should be like four-person alliances. You call them all the same thing, so that way if they ever come up in conversation, it's not even raising a red flag. It's not like, who is this? People just think you're talking about their version of it. I really like that. And then if someone else who's like in one of like, you know, version number three of that alliance says something about it, then you go in the panic mode with your original alliance. Oh, no. How did they hear about it? Did one of you tell them about our alliance? This is it really offers a great deal of cover ups there. I like it.
Yeah. I think that what I've always said is that if I was ever going to have an extramarital affair, that I think that what I would do is I would have to then go for another woman named Nicole, because then I feel like that would greatly decrease the chances of getting caught.
Yes, then you could just answer the phone as all is well, all is normal.
That's right. because then you would, if you accidentally called the person the wrong name, then you couldn't call them the wrong name. You'd always have the right name.
I think what they should probably do, since he was already sort of dishing out these pop culture monikers for people, is I think the entire Goliath tribe, and I know that Nick, you know, has not had this opportunity yet, but I think they should sit down with Mike White and they should workshop alliance names, because he is a professional writer after all. So I think he should be in charge of naming all alliances, including the ones he's not in, possibly.
So is it just you go to Mike White and say, hypothetically, if you were going to give me what are some good alliance names?
Is to say, like, Mike, I'm just curious, since you're such a good writer, let's just say that, you know, Natalia and Kara, Angelina, John, Dan and Alec all had an alliance together. What would you call them?
Level six.
Yes, perfect. Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm looking at the cast list right here, and I realize we have Natalie Cole, the daughter of the great Nat King Cole. We also have Elizabeth Olsen, sister of the Olsen twins as well. So along with Mike White and John Hennigan, this is a real star-studded lineup here.
Yes, of people that have famous names.
That's right. That's right. So I think these would all lend themselves to some great alliance naming possibility.
Eric, let's go to another question. This one is an email that came to us from Drew. Drew wants to know, what are your thoughts on the Big Brother-esque use of B-roll in this episode? And I think actually in this season, Eric, a lot of people have talked about the editing so far this season and have liked it. Do you think that Survivor has used more of the Big Brother type cutaway shots this season to give us these little character moments?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're mere like two episodes away from like, well, there I was and I entered the jungle and what I saw was some puzzle pieces, a raft. And I thought to myself, what's the theme here today? Boy, this is going to be a load of fun.
But I think that it's been effective. I think that we've gotten to see a lot of funny moments in this season.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there has been a little bit more of tongue firmly planted in cheek, which is nice. I have always loved the fact that Survivor has so firmly protected the integrity of the actual game, but they can take the game seriously and still give the fans these sort of like fun little Easter egg moments as well. So I've been enjoying it. Yeah, I think it's been paying off so far well. And I don't think anyone wants to see it tip over too far in the other direction, but so far so good.
Yeah, because I think it sort of lets us, you know, have our cake and eat it too, where a lot of people complain about how, oh, we don't really get to see enough character moments and you know, spend time with just getting to know the characters outside of the scope of, you know, what's going on with the strategy. But when people are, you know, mentioning other people by name, and if you're a little confused about what we're talking about, where if I'm sort of telling the story of, so me and Eric, and then when I'm talking about Eric, we're seeing like a quick scene of Eric doing something stupid, and then also Josh Wigler, and then they're showing him. So they have these little moments that we're getting.
And I think that if I'm kind of thinking through it, I think we have gotten to know a lot of these characters and have some fun with them a lot more so far through two episodes. I mean, if you'd like scanning the cast quickly, I think we saw Pat character moments, definitely Natalie moments, you know, Christian and Gabby. I think we've been, you know, get a Dan. It's fun. It's great. I love getting to see a little bit more of a playful side of people or just poking fun at them a little bit.
Okay. Let's go with a question from one of our iconic listeners. John Tinkham has a question for us. Here is John.
Hey, Rob and Eric. What is good? Just wondering if we're going to keep seeing this theme of let's go on our CBS reality shows. It's really taking a lot out of me after Big Brother and, you know, after Davey now, when he finds his idol, you know, shout let's go about five times in a row. I don't know how much more I can take this. Really hoping The Amazing Race is a little different. But hope you guys are doing okay. Stay crushing it and all the best to baby Dino the dog. Thanks.
Yeah. That was like the sad Tay Zonday edition of John voicemail.
Let's Holy go. Moly. Wouldn't this make Davey the Let's Go originator? Because this filmed before Big Brother did.
Okay. Well, here's Davey with finding the idol.
Congratulations. You have found the hidden immunity idol.
Let's go, Davey. Let's go.
Well, you know, Corey Brooks on Big Brother 18 was a let's goer. There's a cast member on the challenge, Are You the One, who's been yelling let's go for about 3 years now. Mm-hmm. It's not probably the world's most original catchphrase in the first place, but what's old is new again, as always. So maybe this could be laying the groundwork for a Davey, Casey, Amazing Race team let's go.
Team let's go. That's interesting. Now, if enough people are doing it, is it early enough? Can we get in and claim ownership for that? We invented Let's Go.
Oh, absolutely. the audience is a very, very, you know, short capacity for these things. I think if we just keep saying it long enough, it'll become ours.
Yeah. Let's go. Like, we need to put like our own sort of spin on it.
Yeah. I feel like you are going to say, let's go do some errands.
Let's go.
Man, expect the unexpected every day out here.
Yeah.
Let me give you this question. This is from one of our other great callers. Dan has a question about this Women's Alliance.
Hey, Rob, what is good, Autumn of Eric? This is Dan Sinensky with a question about Allison. In the preseason, Allison wanted to be part of a Women's Alliance, but now there's a Women's Alliance that doesn't include her. What's going on? Loved Summer of Stein and Know-It-Alls was great. Keep up the good work.
You know, we saw Dr. Allison and she was included in Angelina talking about how no women have found the idol. But now she's sort of been left out in the cold with the three women are going to find a guy.
Yeah, this is very interesting, but just because she wanted to be in one doesn't mean that they want her to be in one. So I think that's what we're seeing here. I think that she came out of the gates rather strong, which could be a good thing or a bad thing. But I do think she is a bit of an intimidating presence. Now, here is my big hope for this situation. Listen, a female alliance to the end, that's fun. That's great. But as we saw on One World, that type of dominance does not necessarily lead to entertainment. What I am dying for, and I think we might have on this season, is what if we actually have the all-female faction war, the great strong female battle between two separate groups of equally strong women with other strong women on the outskirts. We have on already just looking down tribal lines, you have the Elizabeth, Lyrsa, Gabby of it all. Then we've got our Kara, Natalia, Angelina of it all. And then you have Allison and Napalm Natalie, you know, lurking in the outskirts. Mm-hmm. I feel like this could be shaping up to be the theme of this season. What do you feel about this?
So this is like the meme of like that real next level thinking of that this is, you know, you have gone to galaxy brain of not Women's Alliance taking over, but two women's alliances taking over and then doing battle with each other.
Yes, I think that
and
would
then
be...
the one man left will win.
Absolutely.
I don't want to.
Yep. The question is, who's that man who's just left sitting there at the end to pick up the pieces? I'm looking at the list quickly. I can't quite earmark who that's going to be.
Probably Christian.
Yeah, probably.
Let me bring in this question from Graham from the Bay, who wants to talk about this alliance.
Hey, Robbio. Hey. Hey, Eric Stein. Hey. It's Graham from the Bay. I know it's Survivor season and not Big Brother season anymore, but Eric, I'm glad you're on this voicemail show because when I first saw this Natalie, Angelina, and Kara alliance on the Goliath tribe, I don't know about you guys, but I low-key got flashbacks to the Brigade in Big Brother 12, where you had a small core of people in a relatively large group with each core member bringing one person in, and it proved to be a very successful alliance in that season of Big Brother. Now, I'm not wondering, is this the next Brigade? But I'm wondering, is the Brigade a fair comparison for this alliance in terms of how these alliances were constructed and function within the game? But also, if this is the next Brigade, who's the beast? Who's the animal? Who's the brains? And most importantly, who's the meow meow? Love to get your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Eric, we don't need to assign the roles of the Brigade here for the Survivor analogs, but I actually got some feedback on Twitter because when I spoke with Cass, Cass was talking about the three showmances, and then I was getting some pushback from that. Like, no, they are not showmances. It's like the Brigade, and that they are everybody who's just responsible for one person.
Yeah, the classic parachute plan. I think this is actually a very effective strategy because if the core loyalty is with the three women, but these guys do a little bit of bidding for them, a little bit of heavy lifting, I think this could be good. It also helps mask the actual alliance a little bit. It makes it harder for other people to pin down who your core squad actually is. So I like the makings of this. There is also one other really sneaky part of their alliance that I think is working really effectively for them. And that is, I would pay anyone $500 if they could tell me the difference between Natalia and Angelina. So they have two of the exact same person playing in their alliance, going to really keep people's heads spinning.
I really struggle with that as well. I think that sometimes Angelina has glasses on, but they will have a similar look, and it has been a little hard to distinguish. I will say that Graham from the Bay did get Natalie and Natalia confused.
Ah, you see, it's tricky.
Well, I am able to tell them apart.
that one is a little easier.
That's easier.
I in preparing for this, I noticed that Angelina is a bit of an Adam Klein protege, from what I understand. I think that that might be, let alone the fact that they know each other by going to a very good school. So that's a good starting point for her as well. But I do wonder if possibly she may be under his tutelage a little bit, and if that actually could be a benefit in the game.
Okay, we will see. What do you think the Adam Klein School of Survivor entails?
That's a good question. How would he even articulate what he did in the game to get himself to the end? So how could she replicate
that? I mean,
he's an
encyclopedia. So I think that is sort of a difficult skill to, to pass along to somebody.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, maybe just by having someone who's kind of been through the experience, just like Jose guided JC through this year of
right. I'm sure that you have spoken to people that are going on these shows that say, Eric, teach me to play Big Brother like you.
I have. I once, before her going on the second time, I had a 3-hour sit down strategy talk with Francesca. So.
And I, too, have spoken with people before they play the game, and it does not necessarily, you know, it's hard to, you know, really pass along knowledge.
People are who they are. That's why we can earmark who's potentially going to win 37 seasons into this, because people make the same mistakes and they make the same correct moves season after season after season. We saw it with Napalm Natalie. We saw it with Jessica in these very episodes. The casting does an amazing job of casting type A people who are their true selves. And, you know, that's why you can't really impart a style of gameplay upon someone else, because they can't play like someone else. They can only play like themselves.
All right, Eric, let me bring in this question for you from Millennial Max, who wants to talk about one of these three pairs in this Goliath Brigade.
Eric, my man, what is good? This is Millennial Max coming at you from the D. We all know that you were involved in one of the oofiest showmances in history, so you are the perfect person to ask. On a scale of 1 to 7.5 oofs, how would you rate Kara and Dan? Catch you on the flip side, my bro.
Millennial Max, he is a ride or die, but I don't think that you had one of the oofiest showmances of all time, Eric.
I appreciate that, Rob. I mean, a woman speaking to me is a good thing, you know, so yeah. I can't oof myself for that.
Yes.
And
it wasn't boring.
That's right. I fear for Dan. I know I already kind of set up a similar scenario for Christian earlier, but Dan seems to have a bit of insecurities from his earlier days. As we know, he is only a Goliath in bloom, you know, so he has not fully blossomed into his full Goliath self. And I feel like we are going to be left with Dan in a big pile of simpering Reichenbach at the end of this.
Oof.
A 5-oofer for Dan and a no oofer, a 5-foo for his lady in of the night, who's going to take him
lady
out here.
Night.
Yeah, that wasn't the right turn of phrase. I think I was going for something more along the lines of a Black Widow.
Yes, okay. Eric, I want to talk about Dan and Kara and their mission to hide the idol, which ended up failing. So Kara seemed concerned. She felt like that maybe they should come up with a better hiding spot for the idol. She's asking him about it. So I want to play this from the episode. Kara is asking Dan about the whereabouts of the idol. This is what he had to say.
Where'd you go exactly?
On a tree over there. I feel much better if I don't just bury
it. It's wrapped up in a sock, so.
I want to just make sure I'm understanding this conversation and what they're saying. So Kara is saying, yeah, the idol is in the jacket over there. And Dan's response is like, well, yeah, but it's wrapped up in a sock. So, I mean, if somebody finds it, they're just going to think, like, it's just a sock in this jacket pocket.
Is it possible that this goes back to his police work, possibly? And when he does a search and he thinks he might have a drug suspect upon him, if he does not find the drugs but simply finds balled up socks in their car or pocket, then that's the end of the search. So he knows from his past experience.
Interesting.
That, yes.
Now, Eric, I am not an expert in police work, but if a police officer finds just a sock, does said police officer need a warrant to be able to then search inside the sock?
Interesting. So do you think that Jeremy and Mike had a warrant and shouldn't have been allowed to search his jacket? That is an interesting take here.
Yes. And I don't know if they had a warrant, but Jeremy did find the loot.
Yes. And misdemeanor.
So then Dan tells us in confessional that don't worry about the idol, that nobody's gonna find it.
She's terrified that somebody's gonna go digging in my jacket and find that idol. I'm like, listen, girl, nobody's gonna expect my idol's gonna be in an obvious spot to be hidden.
Yeah, listen, girl. Nobody's going to expect that the idol could be in the most obvious place. This is hiding in plain sight. No one will even think to look in my jacket.
Not for nothing also, but it's not even like the sock was in a shoe, for example, or with his pair of pants, because the last I checked, balled up socks don't go in jacket pockets. So that would be something that would raise my suspicion also.
Listen, girl, nobody's going to expect my idol's going to be in an obvious spot to be hidden.
Yeah. Why would it be in an obvious spot, girl?
I named my dog after you. What else could go wrong here?
So that just cracked me up.
Hey, it's a good thing he's hot now.
Okay. Eric, then let me ask you some more questions. Let me go to here is Maria from Florida has a question for you. Here is Maria.
Hey, Rob and Eric, it's Maria from Florida. With a potential swap on the horizon and no secondary tribe names like Levu, Soko, and Yawa from HHH, do you think they're just going to roll with the tribe names David and Goliath? After the swap, is Jeff going to continue to force the theme by asking questions like, how does it feel to be a David who has now become a Goliath? And, you were a Goliath, so how does this change your game to be put in the position of a David? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay, Eric, this has been something that people have been talking about, how the tribes don't have a secondary name. They're just David, just Goliath. How do you think that this will work once we end up switching up the teams in some capacity?
Oh, the caller has definitely seen into the future, and it is going to work with tons of cringeworthy questions from Jeff, just like was just mapped out for us, 100%. I agree. Although, I actually kind of like what we kicked out earlier. Is there any chance whatsoever he's going to, when they shake up the tribes, ask people to self-identify and put themselves on the tribe that they think that they most belong on?
Yep, I still think we're going to have like 14 people on the David tribe. And just John Hennigan on the Goliath. John Hennigan and Natalie.
and they destroy the Davids in the next challenge still.
That would be good.
We have not seen this, as an aside, in action yet. But let me tell you something. John is a killer athlete. He does parkour even better than Frosty did back in the day.
Whoa.
He's really, this guy is super agile, and I don't think he's had the chance to show off what he's going to do in these challenges yet. They do not want him anywhere near the individual immunities. If he gets there, he's going to be a real problem for these guys. These other guys, like a Dan or an Alec, they are like, you know, they're not touching his athleticism. It's not even going to be close. He's anything that relies on pure physicality, he's going to kill everybody.
Did you know John Hennigan before he got involved with local politics in Slamtown?
Oh, yeah. I was actually his campaign manager.
Oh.
I was like, I saw it worked for Swaggy C. So I was like, just get a blazer with your own name and nickname on it. And that seems to endear people.
Kevin Daugherty writes in with a email and wants to know, Rob, loved attending the Know-It-Alls, had a terrific time. My question is about the immunity challenge. When Lyrsa is talking about how the Goliaths are so big and invincible, B disagrees and says, look, in my sport, technique beats everything. So I don't believe in the size thing. Doesn't MMA have weight classes exactly because size is an overwhelming advantage? Does B misunderstand both Survivor and her own sport? Thanks, Kevin.
I am actually an MMA expert, and what B said is, in fact, correct. Like, technique will always beat like a barroom brawler, and they do have weight classes now, but back in the early
Brooklyn
days,
brawler?
They had... That is right. They had open weight classes, and in the first ever, like the first five UFCs, a like 145-pound Brazilian jiu-jitsu submission technique specialist dominated all of the kickboxers and sumo guys and barroom brawlers, and the sport has evolved a lot from there. But she is correct. Precision and solutions and strategizing is a big part of how you neutralize your foe. Unfortunately for her, as has been undoubtedly covered a lot. I'm not really sure why she is evaluating the eliminations based on performance, because her son. So not really sure why she'd want to drive that narrative. Loyalty, yeah. Maybe, or who's getting along with who. But I think I would have just left that part of it out of my pitch.
I think she did really bad, but then there was a lot of time lapse that went on during the puzzle part of the challenge. So I think it had basically been forgotten about how bad she did. I mean, from what we saw in, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of challenge competition, she was sucking for the first like 2 minutes of that. And then the hour of working on the puzzle ended up being, you know, cut down to 90 seconds. So I think that both teams had about 45, 50 minutes working on the puzzle well after, you know, B had already been forgotten about.
And I know that they're trying to equalize with the challenge types, but and you would know this better than I would. Are these some of the most uneven opening starting tribes in the history of the show? I know that they didn't, you know, do David and Goliath size based, but it did basically for all intents and purposes end up that way. I can only think of a small handful, and they were really like the ones that were divided by, say, like age or something along those lines that had as big of a disparity. I mean, I think that's part of the thing is that B didn't crush it, but who else was going to run that part of the challenge for them? I mean, even if you still have Nick and he's the superior athlete on your tribe, but he's running this against one of these other guys, it's not like a super level footing. And I understand, yeah, the puzzle then theoretically makes up for that, but it is kind of interesting that they didn't really even try to put them on sort of any level playing ground to start things off. And I know, you know, well, the first challenge was to prove that that's not the case, but since then, hasn't been looking
kind
so good
of the case. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure that there are better examples going back to like Karor versus Oolong. The thing is that on paper, that didn't look like that bad of a mismatch. If anything, it looked like it was going to be in favor of Oolong, that they had like guys like Bobby John and Ibrahim and Stephanie. And so it looked like that they, you know, had some people on the tribe that could do some damage.
Yeah, very true. I don't know who those people are on the Davids necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I know. I look forward to it, though. I could see, you know, like Elizabeth wrecking shop in one of those like in the water tackling sort of challenges. I'd love that.
Eric, let me give you one final voicemail. This is from Ezra.
Hey, Rob. I'm calling in because on the know-it-alls, you guys were very high on the David tribe, even though the last winner who lost the first challenge was John Cocker. That's 10 seasons ago.
All right. So I guess you heard it here first that a Goliath will win the game.
It is very interesting. I know you discussed this on some of your chats last week. Do you buy into this narrative that in order to effectively tell this story from Jeff's point of view and from an edit point of view, and I know we don't like to talk about the edit, but does a David need to win to tell the story of David versus Goliath? Is it satisfying to the viewers if John Hennigan is just laughing in the David's faces and collecting the check at the end of this?
I don't think anybody even remembers the theme when we get to the end. You know, maybe in the finale, Jeff says, like, and it's very fitting that we have two Davids and a Goliath in the final three. You know, oh, we have two millennials and a Gen X, like a hero and a hustler. Do we have a hero, a healer, and a hustler? No, we had no healers made it to the finals in that season. It doesn't matter. They'll reset it in some way. Like, oh, I guess like, oh, look, a man and a woman made it to the final too. So interesting.
Yes. What? The world's greatest social experiment.
Yeah. But in terms of the first person, the person that wins the season not going to the first tribal council, I mean, that's more of an oddity than it means anything else. First off, there are a lot of seasons that have three tribes, and then just by process of elimination, that then only five people are left from that tribe moving forward. So chances are that the winner is not going to be on that tribe. But when you start with a tribe of 10, you know, it's close to a 50-50 shot that the winner is still going to come out of that. So it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I'm not buying what they're selling. I agree.
Sorry,
a little
Ezra.
Bit of a fluky stat.
That's
there.
That's fluky. Okay. All right, Eric, we got some other stuff to talk about here and talk about a little bit of social media. But first, let me thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at BetOnline.ag, who present the Podcast One Sportsnet Challenge. Eric, I am competing against a bunch of other hosts on Podcast One in picking NFL games week after week. I actually went 5 for 5 in week one, Eric.
Whoa, good for you.
Yes, it was a little bit like the David's winning the first challenge, but then not doing so great after that. It's very similar.
I'm sure you'll crash down to earth. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. No, I already have. I'm middling right now in seventh place, chasing some of the other Podcast One hosts on Podcast One Sportsnet.com. You can follow along to see how that's all going. But week five is about to commence. We can only pick from the Sunday games. I'm actually I'm losing to Shaq, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That Shaq somehow has gotten 11 points. I don't really understand the scoring, but I'm in seventh place right now. Tied for seventh.
He's a real Goliath.
He's a real Goliath. Anyway, so I'm chasing a bunch of people. Here are my picks for week number five. And I thought I was picking with the spread. It turns out we're just picking them straight up. So the week that I got 5 out of 5, I thought I was picking with the spread, but I was just picking straight up. I like the Panthers over the Giants. Sorry, Pat Cusack. I like the Chargers over the Raiders. I like the Chiefs over the Jaguars. I like the Texans over the Cowboys. And my lock of the week is the Rams over the Seahawks. You like all that?
I think I'd stay away from the Chiefs-Jags game if I were you. I'd go back to the well on that one. Just
what are you gonna do?
Two good teams. It's too much. Too much.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You can follow along and join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag SportsNetChallenge. In addition to if I win a week, five lucky listeners will get $100 credit on betonline.ag. And if I am the winner of the season, a charity of my choice will be receiving a check for $5,000 from betonline.ag. Having a lot of fun with the Sportsnet Challenge Pick'em. If you want to get involved, to join the betonline.ag Pick'em, where you could win 25K, use the Podcast One code to receive a 50% welcome bonus. NFL, college football, and the biggest UFC fight of the year. It's all happening. Is that B? Is she fighting somebody?
I don't think so.
No. Okay. It's a sports fan's dream. Don't wait any longer to make your online wagers and head on over to betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% bonus. Sign up today. That's PODCAST1 to receive a 50% bonus at betonline.ag. And speaking of the biggest fight of the year, Conor McGregor is taking on Khabib, UFC October 6th, Las Vegas T-Mobile Arena. So that's the one, Eric.
There you go. What about an undercard of Mike White versus Learsa?
Yeah, wow. Could be huge. Okay. So, Eric, let's get into the social media. And, of course, if anybody wants to send us in the weekly theme song to the Survivor Tweets segment, you can get the musical copy of this little number right here. But nobody sent us one, so you get nothing. I got nothing for you.
I like it. I like it, though. I'm feeling the potential.
Okay.
Just like I feel the potential in this week's Wand Off, you're going to be hearing a lot of blame it on the rain, November rain, rain, go away.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of those in your future.
A lot in the future. Do you like the Wand Off? I don't know if we've ever talked about this.
Love it. Love it. It's a real... showing of creativity. I very much enjoy it.
Yes. Now I remember. You had tweeted, though, that you felt like that... because people listen on 1.5 or 2x speed, that the rapping seems more impressive.
Yeah, I don't remember why this was, but at one point I went back to 1x, and it did not have the same spitting fire that it had at the double speed.
The same oomph.
That's right.
Okay. Eric, I have found so far that the Survivor alumni are not tweeting a ton about this season, but if social media news breaks, please let at Alex M. Rubino know. Alex puts together our Twitter social media segment for us, so let us know. Twitter, Instagram, if you see anything noteworthy. But let me give you a couple, and then I've got something. Apparently, there was a conversation between Ken McNichol and Richard Hatch on social media.
That is a buddy duo right there.
Yes, okay.
I would like to see that sitcom.
So here is Ken McNichol and he started it. He seemed to reach out to one Richard Hatch. And so he wanted to say to Richard Hatch, "Hey, Hatchy, how about we start our own Survivor show, but with a twist? No clothes, no idols, because where would you hide them? What do you think, Richard Hatch?"
Oh, I don't like where this is going.
Yeah, this seems...
I can only guess what the response is going to be.
So Richard Hatch responded, "I vote there still should be idols."
Yeah, I feel like he missed the point of the original tweet.
And Ken goes on, "But wherever will you hide them?" And Richard Hatch says, "Ken, I'm certain you could help me figure out that little problem. We'd be unstoppable."
What's really surprising, a few takeaways from this, but the number one is that I'm surprised that Richard knows who Ken is and engaged with him. That's my biggest surprise here.
But why today? Why this week?
I don't know. It's very flirtatious, though. Yeah. Ken seems like someone who thinks he's going to play again, trying to forge some unlikely alliances.
And then Richard, okay, now he's got, you know, Ken intrigued. If you be up for practicing, quote unquote, hide the idol before they call us to do the show, let me know. The more practice, the better, as far as I'm concerned. As you know, Ken, it's all about strategy. We should be sure that we're prepared.
I don't think there's too many ways that we can interpret this other than just take it at face value.
Why is this happening? Why is this not a direct message?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That's it. You know, like back when people don't really know how to use their social media and they're accidentally posting what they think is a private conversation as like a status update. I think that's what's happening here.
Whoa, that's wild.
Got that right. I feel like this is something that maybe you should get in on this and stream this live on your network.
Yeah, I'll be shut down. I'll be shut down. Eric, then here's one. Jonathan Penner went to Twitter and tweeted out, "Good second episode, but am I the only one who thinks that Christian, who is fascinating, by the way, looks and acts incredibly distractingly like a young Bud Cort from Harold and Maude? And if I'm the only one, then you guys should watch it so I'm not alone."
Oh, very topical.
Do you think that he looks like a young Bud Cort?
I don't think that there are more than three total people that could produce in their mind an image of a young Bud Cort.
Well, let me do a Google image.
I just Google him right now. Actually looks nothing like him. First of all, Bud Cort appears to be like maybe 14 on the show.
A young Bud Cort, though.
Yeah, well, it's very, really.
Maybe Penner is friends with Bud Cort, and it was like, my name out there.
I feel like Penner may have just disqualified himself from playing again. He is disconnected from the millennials and below.
Alexis Maxwell, one of my favorite tweeters, she had a super opinionated tweet. Check out all the opinions in just one tweet. I guess you have all these characters now. You don't have to like break up your tweets by one thought. She said, "Just watch hashtag Survivor episode 2. Thoughts: Davey is so likable. Why does Natalie have to be so rude to everybody? Mm-hmm. Why did Christian get the title for both episodes so far? I feel bad for little cute button Jessica. Second out Blindside is brutal."
It's a lot of thoughts. It's interesting that she's such a prolific tweeter also. It seems like just a random member of the Survivor family that is has come on so strong with her tweet game.
Look, what's
next? Are we going to be reading Liz Markham's tweets or something like that?
I don't think she's been tweeting too much lately, Liz Markham.
Oh, man. Those seem like pretty on-the-nose thoughts. Not really giving a lot of hot takes there. She's more simply recounting what factually happened in the episode, right?
I guess so.
Christian, though, are we at risk, though? It did make me wonder with the naming of the episodes. Are we at risk of Christian going, like, full Philip Coach Brandon Hance Cochran? Like, is it possible we are going to get the season where his screen time is quadruple everyone else's?
That's entirely possible. Yeah.
After him.
Now, who has gotten the most episode titles in a row?
That's a good question. Good question. I feel like that would have to be Coach, right?
Coach?
He feels like he'd be the one who'd have the most iconic statements to base it off of.
That would be interesting to know who has the all-time title, who has the most in a season, and who has the most in a row.
You probably got a few in there.
You know what? The episode titles didn't work the same way. So if you go back, and we could take a look at this because this is a fun conversation. In Survivor the Amazon, the episode titles are Boys versus Girls, Storms, Girl Power, Trapped, Pickup
That's
Sticks.
That's about you.
You know, it's not necessarily like they were more sort of like a generic than being a line from the episode.
What was this episode titled again?
This episode was titled, it was the quote that I played earlier.
The chicken has flown the coop.
Chicken has flown
the coop. Not even so great. I thought the quote of the episode was, you can trust Mother Teresa, but that doesn't mean she could run the challenge.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah. Do you think that Mother Teresa could have run that challenge?
Everybody can trust Mother Teresa. I don't think she could run that challenge today.
I mean, she could have given it a whirl.
She couldn't have been worse than B, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's B versus Mother Teresa in an MMA fight coming soon.
Yeah. Do you hope that somebody refers to her as the B in apartment 23?
Ah, very. That reference was almost as good as Penner's right there.
Does anyone remember the short-lived B in apartment 23? Featuring James Vanderbeek. Good guy.
I actually watched every episode of that.
Yeah, I know. It does not surprise me. So, Eric, next week's episode title is I Am Goliath Strong. So I think that it would be an upset if Christian has three in a row.
Yes, but it also feels like whoever said that is going home next week.
Maybe he might like ironically say it.
Yeah, it feels like what you say when you're foreshadowing your own blind side.
Yeah. Then episode 4 is titled Time to Bring Out the Charm Apocalypse.
Ooh.
That's scary.
I wonder if that goes along with the napalm.
I love the smell of Natalie napalm in the morning. It's time for the Charm Apocalypse now.
Oh man.
All right, Eric, I have a little bit of a treat for you.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Tweets baby tweets Rupert tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yeah. Eric, it's back.
What? Has he been unlocked?
No. No, he has not. But where there's a will, there's a way. And you cannot keep a good man down, and you cannot silence Rupert Boneham, because Rupert Boneham is taken to his other account, his other Twitter, at Rupert's Kids, and he live tweeted this week's episode of Survivor from the Rupert's Kids account.
Now, are his Rupert's Kids his actual kids, or is that like his charity?
Yes, that is the charity of 306 followers right now. Rupert is, again, locked out of his Twitter account, and I think that we need to let the word out. So let Twitter support, let at Jack know about the case, because Rupert cannot get into his main Twitter account, but he is tweeting from at Rupert's Kids. And Eric, I have a collection of Rupert tweets, so I think that you are pretty much a standout at this game. No,
I think so. I feel confident in this. I was also thinking maybe we should do like sort of a behind the scenes expose about his account and how he got locked out. And I think the man for the job might be the great Dees Ghoulish. I feel like he'd
be great.
Put on his detective cap and report back to see what he can get done with good old Jack and Twitter and get this resolved once and for all. This is becoming a national crisis.
Yeah. The long story short is that he lost the password. I mean, I think that that's the extent of it. I don't think that there was any foul play here.
Boy, with gameplay like that, Rob.
Who took my password?
So it's harkens back to when he built the underwater shelter or whatever that drowned his people while they were sleeping. more brute force than brain, you know?
Right, right. Or he may have also forgotten the email address.
He probably forgot how to read. Right.
It could have been any one of those things, but
so many options. All right, so anyway, I'm ready.
If there are any white hat hackers out there that could hack Rupert's Twitter account and then get him back in, that would also be of help.
Yes,
benevolent,
maybe
hacker.
Mr. Robot, possibly.
Yes. Okay. So Eric, how many fake Rupert tweets, or I'm sorry, how many real Rupert tweets do you want to have in there with the fake Rupert tweet?
Oh, let's go with three.
Three. Okay, so let me narrow down the field, and then let's see if you can find the fake Rupert tweet in with the real Rupert tweets, okay?
All right. I feel legitimately nervous, and this is not like a shtick. I'm feeling the adrenaline running through my body right now.
All right, here we go. Number one.
Don't forget to tune in on Wednesday at 8 p.m. on CBS. Hashtag David versus Goliath.
See, that does seem like what Randy would tweet if he was trying to get himself on the show with a tweet.
They also
possibly
call that a Mr. Pectacular tweet.
Yes, yes, yes.
It would be much longer. And
there was one of those epidemics the other day when Mr. Pectacular released his new single. Suspiciously, it was noticed that about 25 CBS reality stars tweeted the exact same verbiage regarding the song.
It's weird when that happens. Okay. Number two.
The look of the tribal council is badass. At Survivor CBS.
Okay. Number three.
Wow! Exclamation point. Hashtag Survivor.
And number four.
I didn't see that one coming.
Oh.
All right, Eric. Rupert was in classic form on Wednesday night.
You would almost think that, yes, he was doing this for your benefit now.
Yes.
These are so on the nose.
Playing the hits.
Yes. I mean, I'm going to use my own strategic chops to rule out Wow, because you're better than that. I don't think you would have written Wow as your fake tweet, although I might be overthinking this, but it seems like you would have, you know, built that out a little bit more. So I don't think that's it. I wonder, you know, badass, that does fit his vernacular, but now that he's tweeting from the Rupert's kids, you know, account. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he'd be wanting to watch his mouth. I think it's very believable that he did not see something coming on Survivor. So
you buy that?
Yeah, that seems to fit what I know of him. And tune in and watch the episode seems very believable. So I am going to go. Well, I don't know. I feel like he would comment on the look of tribal. And he does respond to things of that nature. This is interesting. All right, I'm actually going to rescind what I was previously saying. Well, no, I'm really in my own head now because he probably did not see the elimination coming. I am going to say tribal is badass is the fake.
Okay. All right. Final answer?
It is, but I don't feel good about it.
That's really bad.
Yeah, sorry.
Oof.
Oof, that's right.
Eric doesn't know.
The fake tweet. Do you want to have a second guess?
Nope, my heart is broken already.
The fake tweet was,
don't forget to tune in to Wednesday at 8 p.m. on CBS, hashtag David versus Goliath.
A different bearded CBS reality superstar tweeted that one. That was from at selfmade 518, Pat Cusack with the shilly tweet.
Rob, I got to give you some credit. By putting it first, I kind of discounted it. You know, it seemed like if he was back and tweeting again also, like, you know, he'd want people to know what it is that he's talking about. So they'd have to first tune in to know what the next tweets are going to be. Yeah. So
I'm
going to
very good pat Cusack myself on the back for that one because that was
that broke my back like placement. A bad boat ride back to
placement. Yeah. Okay. All right. So Eric Stein, what a thrill it is to catch up with you here during the Survivor season.
I would rather talk about Survivor than Big Brother any day. In fact, I wish I had gone on the correct show.
Now, Eric, do you feel like some people wanted us to talk about how which survivors from David versus Goliath could we see on Book Cameo in the near future?
I think it's in the realm of possibility that Mike White and Hennigan are on it already.
Hey, it's the mayor of Slamtown. Just wanted to say happy birthday. Hope you have a good one.
I feel like I could see Jeremy having some fun ones. We haven't chatted about him much. He's had a couple of zingers there in the early going. I think he'd be nice. I think that maybe some of our showmances could do a two-for-one deal. Mm-hmm. You know, as they say, F it. You know, they can just put that out there into the world and let their love fly. CBS be damned. I'd like to see Elizabeth on there. I think she's someone that I would probably pay to get a message from. And I think Davey would do a nice job as well. Those are maybe Nick. Nick. He'd do well, too.
Yeah, because Nick could give you an alliance name for, you know, hey, we're going to call this alliance Flotsam and Jetsam. That's us.
I'm going to give Nick the most likely the Billy Garcia award for who is going to wear their Survivor outfit to all future appearances. I think we're going to see Nick in that blazer every single time we see him at a charity event for the next 5, 10 years.
I think he has a shirt now.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
His identity is at a crossroads.
Yeah. Lyrsa might be good on the Book Cameo.
Excuse me?
I think she'd be good. But I think that the star of Book Cameo could be Christian.
And let's not forget a Hot Cop, you know? I think he could have a following. I mean, it feels like Dan has a disproportionate amount of fandom for what he's actually done on the show so far. I mean, I think he's been having some struggles in the game. But he seems to really be getting a good amount of attention from the fan base. So, you know, I think he's unlike some past social media stars who did not read so well on Survivor and Big Brother. It seems like Dan has carried over his fandom nicely.
Yes. And then Napalm Natalie, I think, might be an interesting choice for a Book Cameo to reach out to Eric, because I think that you might like go on there and type in, okay, Natalie, happy birthday to my mom. We love Survivor. And then you just get a message from her. No. I'm not saying that. Yeah, no,
I'm not going to say
doing it. I'm not doing it.
Right. It could be like Cody of Big Brother 19, where her whole shtick is that she theoretically is resisting everything that's being asked of her, but yet somehow seems to be willingly going along with it all. Also,
she's
going to
no sell it. OK,
right. She's on. Not for nothing. I think we should be more than a little offended that they never reached out to us.
Oh, no. No, I don't even know the process of who reaches out. Do you have to reach out to them? You would think that somebody... I should ask Stephen Fishback about it. He seemed like he didn't really want to talk about it with the one conversation that I had with him.
Maybe,
and he suspended his account now, so he's... I think maybe
business is slow.
Maybe business is slow. Okay. All right, Eric, after I close the podcast, do you have any comments that you want to say about Big Brother 20's finale?
Sure. Okay. We can do 5 minutes on it.
5 minutes. Okay, we'll start the clock. But I will not make any of the Survivor fans suffer through that. So I will play all of the closing music and then stay tuned for Eric Stein talking about the Big Brother 20 finale in just a moment. We have the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday, so be on the lookout for that show. And of course, thank you so much to the patrons of Rob is a Podcast that make all of this podcasting possible. So great to meet so many of you all in New York this week. For more information on everything we're doing and how to join the Rob is a Podcast patron community, go to robiswebsite.com/patron for more information. Follow Eric Stein tweets on social media. Eric, have you had any tweets since Barbados?
No, I have not.
Okay. All right, that's good.
Maybe. You know, maybe I'll now that Rupert's back and inspiring me, maybe I'll rejoin the fray.
Okay. All right. And that's going to do it for us. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye. Big Brother time. Do you hear that sound? It's Eric Stein about to break things down. Watching the show for us 3 times a week. Instilling truth on knowledge in me. Your house guest better watch your mouth. Knows what to say. after the credits talk, Eric. Oof.
Let's be, yeah, oof is right. Let's be real here. This is about five people left with us at this point.
This one, so. This is for all of the...
My rider dies from the beginning. I see who flip-flops. I see who comes back when the times are good. I see who leaves when the times are bad.
Yeah. How many people left when the times were bad?
Yeah, the times were bad about 15 minutes in. This guy doesn't know anything about Survivor. I'm shutting it off.
Okay.
And they left, and the very few people who are left, they're the real ones.
Yes, all the real ones.
I will cook a plate of, it's like a beef sauce for anyone who's left listening.
All right, Eric, you were in Barbados. We witnessed the end of Big Brother 20. Spoiler alert that the winner of Big Brother 20 was KC.
Let's go.
Okay. And so there you have it, Eric.
Well, it was amazing after spending so much of my summer watching and covering Big Brother to be out of the country for the final two episodes. And I did not go back and watch Big Jeff. I saw what was happening and I said, I cannot do this to myself, especially not after the fact. Yeah. If I had been sitting there that Sunday night, okay, that's one thing. I could have cracked open.
You didn't need to watch the recap or something. Right.
But I did watch the finale. It was so unbelievably rushed. I don't understand what is the compulsion to have this recap? Like, as if someone is going to finally, like, someone's going to decide, you know, maybe I should try out that Big Brother show one episode before the finale, and they need to get caught up to speed. Wouldn't it just be better to put parts one and two on Sunday night, which would make that into a big episode as well, and just build out the finale a little bit more? I do not understand, like, the thought process behind this. I don't get it from the network side, the producer side, anything. Nobody likes this. And it's been getting worse and worse through the last few years, but this was bad. There was not enough time to answer the questions needed. And when the vote is this close, if I'm sitting in one of those final two chairs, you want to do it justice. You've just given 100 days of your life to this. You should be able to at least talk about it.
Well, I had asked this on finale night to the LFC, but do you feel like that there is anybody that is in the production of the show that says, boy, I feel like that maybe the outcome of the game might have been different if we would have given there more time for the jury segment, and maybe this is an indictment on this format?
Yeah, you would think that, but I think that's something that they would have to know ahead of time, right? So it must be just some sort of a marching order that's coming down to them to have this sort of pacing element. You know, maybe it's because of football is going firing off at that point on Sundays. I'm not really sure what the reasoning is, but there's no reason. I think the mid-season sort of recaps, especially when we get them on a Friday or something, that makes sense. Maybe you can actually pick up some viewers. If someone has missed a few here and there, they kind of catch themselves up to speed. But why do you need to recap something that's about to end? I just don't understand what we're gaining from that. And it's, you know, I was kind of scanning through it, so I got the gist of like what the new stuff was, and it was nothing anybody needed to see.
I understand why there's a recap, because there's nothing going on the Sunday night, and so that I understand why you need to, you know, clips there, and there were some good clips that they could have shown, but, you know, unless it's like they cannot turn around the part one of the HOH fast enough to get it on the Sunday night show, which... maybe like that has to do with like, do they not hire the same number of editors for the last week of the season? Like in terms of like staffing the show, do they let people go like in middle of September because they don't have as much going on and it's just an impossible turnaround? But it makes so much sense of like, at least give that Sunday episode, give people a reason to watch that recap instead of turning it off 5 minutes in like, oh, it's just going to be a recap.
Yeah, or do like what Taryn did on the morning updates the week of the finale, and kind of at least give us segments about the final three talking through their biggest game move. So at least it's at least apprising the viewers of what we should be taking away going into the finale and building up all three of them as candidates. We don't need to see things about, you know, Sam loses her cool right before the finale. Mm-hmm. That does not help build to the climax of the season in any way.
Yeah, or that Rockstar had to walk around doing the shaking the salad for Mr. Spectacular.
Yeah, whoa, funny stuff.
So any thoughts on Tyler losing the game?
Yes, I do actually have some thoughts. And I think that Tyler played a very good game. I am not on board with Tyler as an all-time great of this show. I believe he probably had the best overall skill set of Big Brother of any of this season's house guests. But I believe that Casey was the deserving winner of this season. She played the better game this time around. And the main point that I feel supports this is that at 5, 4, and 3, she cast the deciding votes. So if she wanted him out, she had him dead to rights 3 times. A really elite player, it rarely finds themselves in that position, dictate their own fate down to the end a little bit more. And if he goes out 5th, we're not really talking about him as sealing the deal here. So yes, I credit him because whoever was the person making those decisions, in this instance, Casey, but if it was JC, if it was Angela, if it was Brett, they all probably would have protected him in that situation, and he deserves tons of credit for that. His social standing and his relationships were second to none, but the mere fact that if she just simply opted to, she could have taken him out 3 times at the end of the game shows that she earned her keep here. She never voted on the wrong side of a vote. She was well-liked, well-aligned, loyal, and won a ton going down the end. As you said, not flashy, but certainly effective. And like you also said, she's out of the gates, she's a big time front runner if there was ever an all-star or a winner season, because for, you know, that type of gameplay is effective. She did the Rob strategy of go to sleep for the first 6 weeks.
A lot of people like to throw that in my face, like, isn't that what you said, go to sleep? I sort of mean it figuratively, go to sleep and just play a social game. But I mean, you can talk to us in the diary room, that's okay also.
Yeah, but you know what? There are other elements of how to play the game. And she was really strong in some of the elements. Like, it's almost like we've seen more survivors win the way that she played. I mean, this is not like a really direct apt comparison, but like in the same way that like Mike Holloway won his way to the end or something along those lines. Like, Casey just did what she needed to do and worked with her own skill set. I think Tyler, socially amazing. You know, he clearly was the one who was dictating and you know, pulling the strings and advising his alliance. But the other thing I did not love about his game, and in all fairness, we are nitpicking his game a ton because his game was the biggest game of the season, and he did the most by far.
He did Yes.
But what I don't like is that he promised things that he knew he could not deliver on. And that showed up as a huge mistake in his endgame, because there is no world in which Tyler should not have had Sam's vote at the end of this game. Mm-hmm. Sam barely had a relationship with Casey at all and loved Tyler. So the fact that he somehow bungled that vote away shows that the strategy of promising the world to everyone, knowing full well that you can't deliver on that, is not an effective strategy. There's ways of doing that and making everyone feel comfortable and like you have their back without guaranteeing something that you're certain to break.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts on Big Brother 20, Eric?
No, I mean, I thought it was a great season. I really did. You know, we sometimes get lost in the weeds over 100 days and the script gets, you know, it's just all over the place and stuff. It's a long grind sometimes, but this, not to be mistaken, was a really great season. Fun characters, fun gameplay, lots of surprising moments, lots of great weeks of the show, and a lot of people I'd love to see play it again. It was fun to see people in the house going for it and having some personal pride and being upset when things didn't go their way and trying to dig out of it. And it was just nice seeing people have a will to play beyond what we saw on Big Brother 19. It really was nice. It felt old school in a good way. So I really enjoyed it, and really enjoyed covering it with you as well. And what I really enjoyed most about it is that we only really kind of covered it.
We covered it in the best way possible.
That is correct. And we covered it in the way that I have now settled into enjoying the show, which is actually trying to enjoy it. And it made it a lot of fun for me. So I appreciated the opportunity.
All right, Eric, are you holding the door open for a winter of Stein for Celebrity Big Brother?
I think it could be in the cards. I think the celebs are ripe for the picking. I actually think that they that sort of short blast and the you know, the pre-existing characters they bring into the show, they're kind of asking for it, you know. So mm-hmm. I think we need to at least give it some consideration.
Eric, my man, what is good?
Yes. Assuming I don't hibernate for the winter, which is always possible.
Yeah, I think that that would be a real slam dunk. I mean, we could do, what is it, three episodes to do First Celebrity Big Brother? So stay tuned for an announcement on the winter of Stein. Eric, anything else you want to say post-credits?
I think I need a nap.
I think you need a nap.
That's all. Okay.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for being on with us. Always a treat to talk to you. And I don't know when the next time I'll talk to you will be.
What do you think the over-under is on how many tweets I'll get about my lack of understanding of the game of Survivor? I'd say 50.
I don't know. I've been getting hammered. I mean, since I talked to you, that I get like the beat up by the Tangela supporters. Even I apologized about saying that Tangela was boring.
And the Office supporters also. I think you really cut some people to the core talking about Jim and Pam on the last Summer of Stein.
I really got hammered the last week or two, Eric.
Actually, this reminds me, and I won't make you say it because I'll take the brunt of this. I do not like what they're doing with their PR person. This is not good.
What, they literally have a PR person, or you're being figured
out? No. They literally have one, and they're like leaking things to Us Weekly and people.
Like,
what
do they leak? What's a Tangela leak?
So, like, it's things along the lines of they're out running errands together, but Angela's in a pair of heels and a dress. Like, so they're clearly not running errands. It's like clearly a staged photo and things along those lines. And I do not like this. They are not celebrities. They should not think they are celebrities. This has befallen many reality stars before, and I am living proof. I will tell you, we are not celebrities. Rob, you know this. We are not celebrities. Do not treat yourself like a celebrity. No, I've seen too many reality stars turned away at the door at a club right after their season. I don't want this to happen to them. They need to just take a deep breath and go back to regular life as soon as possible. And listen, I'm not going to hate on anyone. Of course, right off your season, you're still in that world and you're going, they should enjoy it. I'm not saying they need to, crawl under a rock or anything, but let's cool it on the fake publicity.
Yeah.
You know, nobody cares in the real world. Like, who's reading through Entertainment Weekly and is like, whoa, Angela Rummins, fourth place finisher on Big Brother 20 scene shopping? Holy shit. I'm so glad.
Was she wearing an engagement ring?
Yeah, that's right. Whoa, moving in together? This is incredible.
Yeah. Eric, are you open to being the publicist for any Big Brother couple? Like, will you take on Fessy and Haley?
I would not, but I would represent JC's post career. I think there's some sponsorship opportunities for him in the cooking realm.
Okay. All right. Good.
No.
Wasn't sure where you were going. Okay.
No, right. It's like a beef sauce. JC's beef sauce.
Yeah. Well,
come on and get nice and fat, my sweeties.
You see, you never get those sound bites on Survivor.
Very rarely. All right, Eric, let's get out of here before we get into any more trouble. All right, Eric?
Sounds good. Thanks, Rob.
All right, talk Eric, national treasure, Eric Stein. Take care, everybody. Bye.
When I wake up in the morning and I'm feeling dread and loathing, there's a pounding in my weirdly shaped head. By the time I check my Twitter and start feeling sad and bitter, I regret my day already. Wish I'd stayed in bed. I'm not fine, but it's a summer of Stein.